Years ago on the Art Linkletter show, Mr. Linkletter asked a young boy, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The little boy says, the chicken, because God can't lay no egg. It's kind of funny, you know, but it makes us stop and think, what about God? You know, how great is he? I don't know that we can fully, I know we can't fully understand him, but what has been revealed, we need to try to study and learn as much as we can. Paul said on Mars Hill in Acts chapter 17, verse 29, therefore, since we, you and me, are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone shaped by man's art and man's devising. Well, we recognize that although we don't know maybe as much about God as we want to, he's not made out of a rock. He's not made out of gold or silver or something that man has come up to. The secret things belong to God, Moses wrote in Deuteronomy 29 and verse 29, but the secret things belong to God, but the revealed things belong to us. So we're going to be talking about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and some things maybe that will just remind us of how blessed we are to have a God like that. First of all, some things about the essence of God. Psalms 90, verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever had formed the earth, or the world, even from everlasting, you are everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting. Psalm 102, verse 27, you are the same, and your years shall have no end. It's difficult for us, I think, as finite beings, to think of something that has no beginning. We all know of the physical world, and well, things started, and someday they will have an ending. But with God, that is not the same. There never has been a time when God did not exist. There never will be a time when he did not exist. So God's eternal. Well, we believe that, although maybe we don't comprehend it as much as possible. Also, God is spirit. What's that mean? John 4, verse 24, God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Brother Ed Myers had this comment about God. It is not possible to illustrate in the final analysis a spirit by any known material substance. It is simply that which is unseen but real. For example, no one has ever seen the spirit of life within a body, but we all believe and know that it is real. You know, you look at me, this handsome guy up here, or whatever you might see with your glasses on, there's spirit in there somewhere. Sometime that spirit's going to leave. But if it were to leave right now, what you see would not be any difference other than wouldn't be moving and breathing and talking. But God is a spirit, and we can know some things about him, although we cannot see him. Romans 1 and verse 20, for since the creation of the world, his, God, invisible attributes, things we can't see, are clearly seen, being understood by the things which are, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without an excuse. Anyone who doesn't believe in God has no justifiable excuse for not believing. You can look around and you can see evidence of what God has done. God is unchangeable. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 6, for I am the Lord and I do not change. And aren't you thankful that God doesn't change? That he don't tell us something today and say, uh-oh, I changed my mind. You know, sometimes we might do that to other people, or other people have done it to us. We make plans to go out and do something, and we go by to pick them up. Oh, I'm sorry, not going to be able to make it today. or even something maybe more serious. Now, there's time when God has changed and even felt regret for what he'd done. Remember Noah and the flood, Genesis 6 and verse 6. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. And on a number of occasions, God was going to do something, and Moses stepped in and changed God's mind, as it were. God may change his will, but he himself never changes. We might also add that God is self-sufficient. While it's true that humans often require help from others, I asked Brother Jim how his garden was doing. Hint, hint, Brother Jim. We lack help from one another. We need help, but God does not need help. 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 5. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything that from ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God. God is sufficient not only to do what he wants to do, but also to give us what we need. God is so pure in holiness. Habakkuk chapter 1 and verse 13, you are of purer eyes than to behold evil. Well, God is not bound by time, and he is holy and pure. But consider, God never has sinned. The Bible tells us that we, always old enough, that we have sinned. But God never has. But it seems that he is so pure and whole that even his son Jesus, when he was on the cross, it seems like that he somehow forsook Jesus. We're familiar with the passage, Matthew 27, verse 46. And from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, there was darkness all over the land. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? It seems as though, from my understanding at least, because Jesus was bearing our sin and God will not allow sin into his presence because of his holiness, somehow he made a separation between him and the Son. So God is eternal. He's without physical form or substance as we know of it, unchangeable, self-sufficient, holy without sin. Now think about the Godhead, the Godhead. Some translations have the idea of Godhood. You know, when a young man, young boy grows up to a certain age, he says, well, he has reached manhood. He has all the qualities that a man possesses. Well, those in the Godhead, each of them possess all the qualities that make them God. But Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4 says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. There are many passages that talk about there is but one God. But yet the Bible affirms the plurality of God. Again, this is something that maybe we don't really understand as well as we should. We are familiar with the expression Trinity. The word Trinity comes from a Latin word which means triple. And it's not found in the scriptures, but the word Godhead is found twice in the New King James translation, Romans 1 and verse 20, Colossians 2 and verse 9, and the King James uses Godhead in Acts 17 verse 29, where the New King James uses the term divine nature. One, definition by Brother Myers, there are three persons in the Godhead, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and these three are one God. I remember when I was in preaching school, been a long time ago, we studied the Godhead. I think it was one of the last courses in our last quarter, And I remember some of the guys was talking about it. You know, if we'd started out with this course, we would all quit, you know, because it's such a deep subject, and the best of us, we, I don't think, can really grasp it, maybe perhaps as well as maybe we should. But we think of these three persons. Let's notice again the Father. In John 6:27, Jesus uses the expression, God the Father. So who is God? Well, he's the Father. Philippians 2 and verse 11, every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Some 51 times in the Gospels, the Father is referred to as God, or God is referred to as the Father. Of course, we're also familiar with God the Son, Jesus. He is referred to the Son of God some 208 times in the New Testament. He is referred to as God by the Father himself. Hebrews 1 and verse 8, to the Son, now this is the Father, to the Son he says, your throne, O God. So Jesus is referred to by the Father as God. To the Son he says, your throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of righteousness is the scepter of your kingdom. And then John 1 and verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Then in verse 14, it explains who the Word is. The Word became flesh and dwelled among us. So the Father is God, the Son is God, but also the Holy Spirit is God. Acts chapter 5, beginning at verse 3, Peter said to Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back a part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. Verse 3, you lied to the Holy Spirit. Verse 4, you have lied to God. Some 26 times in the Bible, the Holy Spirit is referred to as the Spirit of God. So because we think of this, some people say, well, you worship some sort of tritheistic three gods, or pantheistic, you know, many gods. No, we worship one God, but he manifests himself in three places, three people, three persons. One of the greatest affirmations of this plural concept of God is found in the Old Testament. Among those names that are translated God is the Hebrew word Elohim. This word is used 2,570 times in the Old Testament. 2,570 times. And it's remarkable that this signifies a plurality, more than one, and yet it is used with a singular pronoun. Example, Deuteronomy 32, verse 29. Now, see that I, even I, am he, and there is no God besides me. Notice the pronouns I, he, and me. But when it comes to the word God, it's talking about a more than one person there, but he refers to himself as I. And then in Genesis 1, in the beginning was the Word, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. This is where Moses, the writer, used the word Elohim, in the beginning God. And then down in verse 26, he says, let us. So there's more than one being to the God who made the creation. The Father, also we see this, Psalm 100 verse 3, know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves, for we are his people and the sheep of his pasture. He is God. and he has made us, and we not ourselves. So God is the one who made us. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 6, for us there is one God, the Father, whom are all things. So God was involved in making us. Also, John chapter 1, verse 3 talks about Jesus. We quoted verse 1 just a moment ago. But John 1 and verse 3, all things were made through him. Talking about Jesus now. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. Just indicating that the Father made things, now saying Jesus made things. Colossians 1, verse 16 and 17, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and on earth. Him, there is talking about Jesus. Whether visible or invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things consist. So the Father involved in making us, the creation. The Son was involved, but we find also that the Spirit was. Genesis 1, verse 2. We'll start with verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. There, God, the Spirit, was involved in creation. Job 33 and verse 4, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. Indeed, we find that from just these passages, the Father was involved in creation, the Son was, and the Holy Spirit. Psalm 110 verse 1, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my hand till I make your enemies your footstool. The Lord, Elohim, or Yahweh, said to my Lord, sit here. So we find them all involved. If you observe that these things, it's interesting to know that you have, again, the singular and the plural in their being. We noticed earlier, I guess the easiest passage from Genesis 1, verse 26, God said, let us make man in our image. Some people say, well, the us was the angels, but that is not the case. The angels had no work in the creation, but they were there. Job 38 and verse 7, when the morning stars sing out, and all the sons of God, the angels, shouted for joy. They shouted for joy when they sing the Father, the Son, and the Spirit in creation. And then in Genesis 3, verse 22, the Lord said, behold, man has become like one of us. Again, we see the God they're referring to himself in the plurality. Genesis 11, verse 7, we have the problem with the Tower of Babel. And God said, let us go down and confuse their language. Let us go down. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8. Isaiah saw God in this vision, sitting high and lifted up. It says in verse 8, also I heard the voice from the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, here am I, send me. Now we're aware that there are some religious groups that doesn't believe in what we refer to as the Trinity, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Back in 1988, I guess it was, when we first moved to Big Spring, the people there, Brother George Tucker and other congregations, were supporting the work, trying to get it started again. And we had door knockings, I think, every Saturday for several months. A group would come up and we'd go out door knocking. I remember on one particular day, I met this man and talking to him a little bit about the Bible and about inviting them to church. And he says, well, are you a Jesus-only group? And what do you mean? Well, do you believe there's more to it than just Jesus? Well, I believe in the Father and the Son and the Spirit. No, there's only Jesus. Rejected the idea that there could be more than one being. But such people would have trouble, I believe, in Matthew chapter 3, verse 16. When he had been baptized, talking about Jesus, Jesus came up immediately from the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting upon him. And suddenly a voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Maybe you can just picture in your mind's eye Jesus coming up out of the water, and there may be dripping water from his clothes or whatever, and then something like a dove. A lot of people have the idea it was a dove. The Bible does not say it was a dove. It was something like a dove. It may have looked like a dove, I don't know, but it's always like a dove or as a dove. So we have the Spirit coming down and Jesus standing there wet, and then God in heaven talking. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. The relationship of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, having been described as three persons, we need to understand their relationship with each other, especially in the relationship with you and me and us becoming Christians. We find that the Father was, like, for lack of a better word, maybe the architect or planner. Jesus said in John 5 and verse 30, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteousness, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of him who sent me. The Father had the plan, and he sent Jesus. Then Jesus, the Son of Man, has come to seek and to save that which is lost. Why? The Father sent him, and he came. And then the Holy Spirit recorded the life of Jesus and what God had said and what Jesus did, and give us the plan that we have to believe in Jesus and to obey, that we might become children of God. So in order to be saved, we find that we must be subject to the Son whom God sent. And we learn this through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit written down in the Bible. Think of the blessings that you and I enjoy. Made in God's image. Let us make man in our image. I'm sure I don't understand much about that, as I should perhaps, but it sounds good to be made in God's image. And then as becoming followers of Christ, we have the opportunity to be a servant. Now think of God the Father and the Son and the Spirit in the beginning, what they did and all that they have done, that somehow we can be associated with them in a positive way. We can be a servant. And maybe if we just be the lowliest of the low servants, what a blessing that would be. But then through what the Spirit has given us, the Bible, what God the Father did in sending Jesus, and what Jesus did, we can, through faith and obedience, become children of God. 1 John 3 says, we now are children of God. We now are. Many passages talk about being children of God. My father, I think, was a great man. I think he had a third grade education. But he was a preacher, he was an elder, highly thought of in the community and so forth. And I am proud that to be his son, and the idea to be a Stidham. Because in days gone by, when we all lived there and so forth, well, we had a good name, very poor people, but we had a good name. But think if we can be called a child of God, a child of God. And as Romans says, if a child, then we are heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. What a blessing it is that we have this. The secret things belong to God, and I'm sure we could all have questions or think of questions that I'd like to know. But God has given us the things that we need to know, and we need to study to show ourselves approved to God that we might be what we should be. So as we think about these things, and although we maybe cannot have a real total concept of what God is, we don't even know what a spirit is, except it's something that makes us alive or whatever. And without the spirit, the body is dead. And one day under, our bodies are going to give up the spirit, and we'll either be changed in a moment, the twinkling of eye, if Christ comes in our time, or our body go back to the dust from which it came, and our spirit will go back to God. And then on resurrection morning, there'll be some type of reunion with our new bodies and that spirit that will come with Jesus. What a blessing we have to look forward to.